Ah, the music was so grand, so powerful, so uplifting, and yet so sweet, so subtle, so enchanting, that I seemed floating away, with no thought but to soar upward to the very throne of life and love. All petty affairs of life, all outward sense of existence melted away, and in the pure atmosphere of that celestial melody, my soul asserted itself in all its purest aspirations for the perfect completeness of life. I love Zenkoia for its divine harmony of sweet, inspiring music, and, oh, dear ones I love on earth, could you have been with me in spirit, my bliss would have been complete. Social life in Zenkoia. In walking through the streets of beautiful Zenkoia city, I have observed the perfect freedom of its inhabitants, the undisguised manner of living, the open frankness, and the confidence each one seems to repose in his neighbor, and also the unceremonious hospitality of each household, for every passerby is welcome to enter, rest, refresh himself, and examine whatever excites an interest in his mind. I have noticed this, because at first it appeared very strange to me, so at variance with the customs of mortals, who shut themselves up in their homes, becoming sometimes exclusive and ceremonious in their bearing toward others. But I have learned that while it would be unwise and unsafe for mortals to leave their homes open to the inspection of every curious passerby, and imprudent in the extreme for them to invite every stranger into their households, it is perfectly safe to do so in the spiritual city Zenkoia, whose inhabitants are pure and spotless, who have become purged from all gross and carnal appetites and habits, who do not gossip and slander, who love each other, whose families are bound by the closest ties of tender sympathy and affection, and whose lives are so pure, so devoted to the welfare of others, they have nothing to conceal. Every home is a shrine of prayerful praise, every family bows at the altar of infinite wisdom, each inhabitant has some lesson to repeat, or some experience to rehearse to the newcomer into these high spheres, that will be a guide to his feet. Every habitation contains something of interest to the stranger who may have but recently ascended to the upper courts of Zenkoia. And there is no risk in entertaining the stranger, for no impure, selfish, worldly-minded spirit can enter Zenkoia. He could not breathe its refined atmosphere, the brilliancy of its light would blind him. For while it is true that exalted spirits can descend to lower spheres or conditions, where grossly-minded intelligences dwell, surrounded by the darkness which their mental state throws off, and they minister to the necessities of those earthbound souls, yet it is as impossible for those spirits to ascend to the upper heights as it is for mortals to pierce the heavenly worlds with their material bodies, for as the physical keeps you down to earth, so the weight of passion keeps those spirits down. Therefore, no impure spirit enters Zenkoia, and none who dwell afear to entertain the stranger. For all the inhabitants of that celestial city are possessed of clear vision, and they can readily read the interior thought and desire of whoever comes within their sphere. The dwellers in that happy city associate together in groups, all working for the common good, each obeys the law which all assist in framing, everyone contributes to the welfare of the people, the beautifying of the city, the maintaining of free, open schools of instruction, and in upholding a good government. I have often thought of the beauty and glory of this sweet life, wishing that I could cause mortals to view it as I do, to view and to emulate, to bring down something of its happy conditions to earth, for then there would be no need of prison walls, no cause for corporeal punishment, but love and justice would reign supreme, and the millennium, long foretold by prophet and seer, dawn upon the new earth. Interior view of Zenkoia. Zenkoia, City of Light, the sight of thy white walls, gleaming in the distance, recalls a vision of thy beautiful streets, so unlike the city streets that mortals know. No jarring noise disturbs the serenity of thy places, and yet the ceaseless murmur, the ever-present appearance of active, energetic life within thy limits, proclaim that therein is found sentient, individualized, conscious existence. The edifices so beautifully constructed of shining stone, artistically adorned with carvings of exquisite grace and symmetry, do not crowd and elbow each other for want of space, but each building stands within its own enclosure, surrounded by garden plats and banks of emerald green. Lofty trees, whose umbrageous foliage furnishes a cooling shade, are scattered here and there, giving an aspect of natural beauty to the scene. The very streets, though paved through their centers with polished stones, are fringed on either side with grassy leaves and nodding flowers, which no careless foot seeks to trample down. And yet, it is a city, vast and magnificent. Its massive buildings, its countless inhabitants, all mark the difference between it and the town or country. At regular spaces, great plats, enclosing flowery beds of every variety of color and perfume, tiny lakes and gushing fountains, gleaming pavilions, furnished with rustic seats and tables, small groves of shade trees, tiny grottos and fairy glens, where birds make music through all the sunny dial, are kept under constant care and cultivation for the enjoyment of all who wander therein, and it is no uncommon thing for groups of harmonious spirits to gather together in one of these gardens, and spend an hour in that communion of soul expressed in the singing of hymns, the exhortations from inspired lips, or the encouraging words given from one to another, that lift the spirit still nearer the infinite light that pervades in some measure all space and permeates all life. A convocation of women. A quality of sex. I have recently attended a convocation of women, in one of these city gardens, earnest, noble, true-souled women, who met together to discuss plans and devise measures for the welfare of their sister women upon the earth. They had gathered together to send forth their silent, penetrating, uplifting sympathy toward those who are crowded almost out of existence, either by the pitiless hand of poverty, or shunned and scorned because of the unfortunate lives circumstances have compelled them to lead. In the realm of spirit, our societies are not confined to one sex, there is no exclusiveness. Woman is not considered incompetent to discuss the questions of life with her brother. Men do not meet in club or barroom, to revel in scenes they would blush to have their sisters witness, neither do women have their cirrhosis, that the gentleman cannot enter, or sewing circle, where gossip and slander are those tender tidbits so delicious to some tasters who are woven into the garments they fashion, with their pernicious and malicious influence. Each convention, every organization is founded upon the polished square of equality, and membership is freely extended to male and female alike, thus rounding out the perfect circle of harmonious life. But this convocation of which I speak, composed entirely of women, are tender, helpful, loving women who have witnessed the struggles and the sorrows of those dear children of humanity, whom mortals consider lost, but whom angels know shall yet be redeemed to honor and virtue, was called together because it had become evident to thinking minds that the so-called progress of humanity will remain but a sham, until society awakens to the fact that while one outcast remains outside the closed door of fraternal sympathy, while one poor sufferer is refused the helping hand or kindly word, to encourage her onward toward the highway of goodness, it is an agency of intolerance, and unworthy the name it bears. And so, out in the bright, clear air, with the radiant sky above their heads, the flowery sod beneath their feet, where the grand old trees chanted their anthems of glory, as the breeze swept through their branches, these spirit women met, and with earnest faces and solemn words, dedicated themselves to the high mission of going one by one out into the material world to sow seeds of love and goodwill in the hearts of mortals, a going forth from their beautiful spirit homes as teachers to humanity, and the one little lesson, so easy to read, so hard to remember and weave into practical life, which they seek to implant in human hearts, is this: judge not, but extend the friendly hand, the kindly word and smile, even more if you can, the cup of water and the meal of bread, to the poor unfortunate, whose life is bowed beneath the weight of its own mistakes, and who bears more punishment within the soul than you can dream it possible for one to endure. And so, from out the company of that heavenly band, whose influence stills all commotion, whose presence breathes a blessing of comfort and peace upon the passing spirit, I come to you today, dear reader, and in the tones of love say unto you of earth, oh, cultivate the truly Christ-like principles within you, develop the germs of benevolence, charity, patience, sympathy, and kindness, and let them flow out from your souls toward all Thusi, whether male or female, who tread the paths of sorrow or vice, until like a cleansing flood they roll in waves of light over their sin-stained souls. Be just, give unto every soul the full measure of love that you would crave for yourself. Then shall the age of humanity become indeed a golden age, the fruitage of which will shine forth in noble lives, in redeemed lives, and in progressive lives, and society so blossom under the developed influence of love and sympathy as to shed its wealth of fragrant beauty over the hearts of all humanity, and every soul be known by the endearing name of brother or sister. Dwellers in Zenkaya. The dwellers in Zenkaya are calm, peaceful, happy souls, who, having known the cares, the sorrows and the temptations of mortal life, have, through their earnestness, through their aspirations, risen above all the annoyances of external things, and grown into harmony with the law of love, which is the law of God. Associating together in bands of fraternal sympathy, they spend their time in devising ways and means to alleviate the condition of those bowed down by woe and suffering, to enlighten the ignorant, comfort the distressed, and free the imprisoned soul from error's bondage, whether it be encased in mortal flesh, or dwelling in darkness of spirit. They have founded schools of learning, colleges, where eminent teachers in the various branches of knowledge preside, and give forth their wisdom to the seeking mind, drawing forth and developing all the deepest, fullest powers of comprehension, and awakening all the noblest faculties of the student. Investigation into the realms of natural law proceeds with minute exactness, experiments which test conclusions as to the cause, utility, and result of chemical and electrical forces are carried on, and schools are constantly sending out graduates, whose duty it is to search earnestly among the children of Earth until they find minds capable of receiving, brains enlarged by earnest thought and study, competent to grasp and elaborate the ideas the spirits give, in order to convey to Earth the practical demonstration of their experiments and investigations. Such is Zenkaya, happy, peaceful, industrious city of light, and as I gaze upon its glittering walls from my casement, I seem to feel a pulsating thrill, emanating, as it were, from its center, of goodwill to man, coursing through my being, until I become one in sympathy with the divine mission of its dwellers, which is love toward God, manifested through love and helpfulness toward all creatures, all things. This is but one of the many cities of that spirit country, that no thought can measure, no beings can. It is dearest, because nearest to me, yielding light, instruction, soul sustenance to myself and to those I love. But there are countless other cities as glorious, peaceful, and ennobling, of which I shall speak in future pages. Among them may I mention Spring Garden City, home of intellect, philosophy and truth, harmonial city, abode of wisdom, purity, and peace, Washingtonia, within whose walls dwell knowledge, justice, and freedom, and many another that presents a beautiful record of noble lives and enduring deeds, that shall outlast all perishable evidence of grandeur, for they are engraved in spirit, and can never tarnish or decay. Oh, darling friends immortal, from the boundaries of that sweet city of light, we waft you spirit greeting, love that shall know no change, sympathy that outlives all outward separation, and only grows the sweeter, peace that the world can neither give nor take away, and which passeth all understanding. A suburban view. I have told you of the beautiful city of light, so near my spirit home. Let me now speak of the natural surroundings upon which I may continually gaze in an ecstasy of delight from my western portico, or where I may roam at will, filled with the bliss of knowing the truth of existence, and its enjoyment among the beautiful works of nature, that kind mother of us all, who brings her sweet offerings of waters, woods and flowers, birds and insects, mountains and hills, for the gratification and pleasure of humanity. Close beside the home I inhabit a sweet vale lies, decked with fertile meadows and sunny glades, watered by glistening streams and rippling brooks, shaded by magnificent oaks and elms, and gemmed with starry flowers of every hue and of delicious fragrance. Thickets of roses, blooming in rich profusion, dot the landscape here and there, roses independent of limited days and weeks, but which blossom on from day to day, one bud bursting into beauty after another, and no one left to bloom alone. A grove of giant pines make music through this leafy vale, as the breezes sweep through their rustling branches, the carol of birds, the hum of insects, the rippling of waters, and the music of murmuring breezes, all combine to form a sweet harmony of sound, that, blending with the pure harmony of beautiful scenery, brings rest and peace to the souls of all who linger here. Sweet Spirit Vale. Dear Auburndale. For such I love to call you, within your borders, in sweet communion with God and nature, the soul becomes purged of all material impurities, and grows into closer harmony with the sacred laws of being a love, sympathy, and purity. Away in the distance rises that majestic pile which to me is Mount Lookout, and as the sunlight rests upon it in gorgeous splendor, I know that upon my earthly home the sun is slowly sinking, in lines of rose and purple glory, behind the western hills. Who could dream of pain and sadness amid the sunny sweetness of this enchanting vale? And yet, even here sometimes comes from afar a sound of distress and anguish, brought plainly to our spirit ears by the waves of sympathy that surge within our souls, and we hear the wails of pain welling up from earth life, and mark the signs of devastation and distress bearing down upon the friends in mortal. But why is this? Because from the depths of human suffering, pain, and death, that we see around us, a heavenly sympathy is born within our souls, and we become desirous of helping those in need, a sympathizing pity, prompting us to extend the cord of love we hold, until it encircles and draws upward, into realms of ineffable peace, the storm-tossed spirits in pain. Disasters come to earth, the conflagrations, misfortune, and from them often result suffering and death, but, glory to him who rules. From the midst of these scenes of sorrow arise pure streams of helpfulness, strength, and succor for the distressed, that not only enriches the receiver, but also overflows with sympathy and blesses the soul of the bestower. Up from the surging billows of distress, out of the fiery furnace of affliction, arises the pure spirit of love, cleansed by its contact with water, or refined by its passage through fire, noble, enduring, true ear growing stronger and better from its upward flight, seeking as it goes the sympathy of angels, who, looking downward from the upper heights, send forth the sustaining chord of affection to draw the spirit upward, singing as it arises this grand refrain, refrainer, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee, e'en though it be a cross that raiseth me. My home, its life and associations. The home I inhabit in the celestial sphere would appear to mortals as a large, spacious, white mansion, surrounded by porticos, verandas, and the like, the doorways opening upon a scene of surpassing loveliness, for the nature wears her richest robes to beautify external life. The interior of this habitation you would observe to be divided into various apartments, each furnished with appropriate furniture and hangings, the whole designed to harmonize in a perfect blending of form, color, and texture, pleasing to the eye and restful to every sense of the beholder. We have private apartments of our own, where, when in need of mental repose, silent study, or deep meditation, the spirit may retire, apart from all companionship save that which breathes through every breadth of space ere the presence of its God. There are times in every life when it is best to be alone, when the spirit requires silent, undisturbed self-communion, when outward presence is an intrusion upon the soul, and at such times we are privileged to retire to our own private sanctum, unquestioned and not misunderstood by others. In my pleasant spirit home there is a quiet nook, where I love to retire and ponder over the great problems of life constantly unfolding themselves before me, and there, surrounded by the beautiful in nature and art, natural flowers climbing over marble statuary, singing birds making music beneath some exquisite painting, I strive to unravel the seeming mysteries of existence, and not in vain, For to the earnest seeker after truth there comes a flood of light, illuminating the dark places and answering all silent questioning. But my home contains apartments where sociability reigns, and there a happy band of spirits daily congregate to amuse, instruct, and bless each other. There, social converse, mingling with the recital of some experience, lesson, or advice, pleasant faces and loving hearts, fill the place with that harmony and peace only to be found where spirit meets spirit in sympathy and appreciative kindness. Eight of us, all young souls, meet together hour after hour, bringing each one his or her store of acquired knowledge, or displaying his or her ignorance upon any theme, only to have it dissipated by some new truth revealed to our understandings by others. We are never unhappy, never restless, never idle. In earthly experience others are far younger than myself, but in spiritual love and life I am the youngest of them all, and it refreshes my soul to partake of what those I love have to offer in the way of acquired knowledge. This is a sample of group home life in the spirit world, a band of loving, earnest spirits, whose highest ambition is to become great in knowledge, that they may understand the laws of life, and thereby be able to avoid mistakes, and competent to transmit a light and knowledge of life to poor, darkened, misguided souls, who moil in sorrow and pain. The members of these groups or bands are guarded and protected, instructed and upheld, by wisdom spirits, who, having dwelt immortal until the physical ripened naturally for the change, passed on to enjoy the fruits of their experience, and, having dwelt long in the spiritual, are competent to guide and instruct these young souls bound to their own by the ties of soul affinity, as well as those of consanguinity, yet confined by no arbitrary laws that chain and restrain the higher emotions. Thus our lives flow smoothly on, and each moment of existence brings us some new lesson, or some new opportunity of being of use to someone of the many spirits who walk the paths of sin or suffering. Chapter 5. Places I have seen. You have heard of Zenkoya City, with its peaceful homes and stately temples. Let me now speak to you of that sweet, blooming, delightful spring garden city, where the good, the beautiful, and the noble gather together to engage in works of love for humanity. It is impossible for you of earth to conceive of the magnitude and extent of this spirit city, which seems almost boundless in width and length. The habitations are of various hues and textures, many of them standing in the midst of luxuriant groves, where the branches of stately trees cast a pleasant shade, and where birds make music all the sunny day, or in the center of blooming gardens, where parterres of beautiful flowers make the balmy air redolent with perfume and the landscape to glow with beauty. These habitations, built as they may be of spotless, alabaster-like stone, marble, or a particular kind of variegated stone, peculiar to this place, which seems almost translucent, as it gleams in rainbow colors beneath the shining sun, are all furnished and adorned with soft, velvet-like draperies, snowy hangings, pure white tables and seats, beautiful, lifelike pictures, ivory statuary, and hanging baskets of flowering plants, and present a picture of home-like comfort and hospitality. Many of the houses are open at the sides, the ceilings being supported by exquisitely carved columns of stone, around which emerald vines, laden with fragrant flowers, climb and cluster, and the passer-by can note the appearance of purity, peace, and comfort within. The people of Spring Garden City. The inhabitants of this celestial city are ever busy, either devising some new method of aiding and assisting the distressed, attending some of its many schools of instruction, its halls of music and literature, or working together in bands to elevate and instruct needy souls upon earth, or in the lower realms of spirit life. These spirit people dress simply and naturally, in flowing robes, of any color which most harmonizes with their interior condition. They are all beautiful, a light radiating from each countenance, an expression of peace and contentment upon each face, and a smile upon the lips, all of which beautify the features and cast a halo of brilliancy around the form. Beautiful groves, watered by running streams, shaded by lofty trees, and made charming by banks of velvety moss, starred with fragrant blossoms, are seen in the midst of this city of souls, and in these spots beneath the blue canopy of the sky, inhaling the perfumed invigorating air, many spirits daily congregate to listen to words of advice, instruction, and wisdom from inspired lips. And from these places the inhabitants of Spring Garden City go forth to their homes, exalted in spirit, or come down to mortals who dwell in sorrow, and shed over them the divine influence caught from higher scenes, which uplifts and strengthens the struggling ones below. Children's Lyceum. In the center of one of the largest, most beautiful groves, where rippling waters, breezes swaying the leafy branches of the trees, and the song of birds send a constant stream of melody through the air, made fragrant by odorous flowers, a stately temple stands. It is of burnished silver, which flashes and glows in the light of the sun. Within, its walls are hung with landscape paintings, and draperies of azure satin. The floor is of white marble, and the spotless ceiling is frescoed with paintings of marvelous beauty. Here, the Spiritual Lyceum of Spring Garden City daily convenes its sessions, where spirit children are taught the duties and the lessons of life. Some of the most exalted and brilliant souls resident in that city are teachers and guardians in this school, and it is their delight to so cultivate and train the young minds under their charge that only the beautiful attributes of the soul will grow, and the selfishness of life shall be eradicated. And it is because of the instruction and development received in such schools as this that little children can so readily return to earth, and bless and comfort weeping mortals with their sweet words of sympathy and love. Harmonial City. Harmonial City is a broad, beautiful, extensive city of the spirit world. Its streets are literally shining, broad and straight, paved with blocks of cool, white stone of great purity, and lined on either side with beautiful, fragrant flowers. In the center of each street, a fountain constructed of a material resembling silver, carved in the most wondrous designs, sends forth jets of crystal water, which rise in fan-like shapes and fall again in gleaming sprays upon the beds of flowers blooming at the fountain's base, whence a cloud of sweet perfume rises to scent the balmy air. At regular intervals, in this city of the spirits, beautiful parks are laid out, abounding in all the natural beauty of flowers, trees, shrubbery and water, serving to delight the eye and calm the senses of the soul. The habitations of this city of harmony are formed or fashioned of various substances, each dweller building his mansion to suit himself. Hence we observe the tiny, white vine-embowered cottage, with its surrounding flower garden, side by side with the stately mansion, environed with smooth walks and velvety lawns. The inhabitants of this place are particularly sympathetic and harmonious. They are at peace with all the world and their own souls. They take no active part in the turmoils and strifes of others. They do not commune with earth save only as they transmit their messages through spirit intelligences below them. Here are grand and massive temples, more richly draped and ornamented than any I have elsewhere seen. Temples dedicated to poesy, music, literature, and philosophy. Here the active, critical, keen-searching scientist is not at home, but the musician, the poet, the philosopher, and the idealist find a heaven. The poetry that delights the soul of the bard is here breathed forth through flower and streamlet. All the surroundings seem made up of poetry, so fragrant, sweet, and subtle is the calm, beautiful life we behold in this wonderful city. Well may it be named Harmonial City, for its very atmosphere, its pretty homes, its adornments, and the features and forms of its inhabitants, all breathe of harmony and peace. The dwellers within this city, I am told, seem not so much like members of one family, as parts of one healthy body, each performing its function and duty. The whole harmoniously blending in one form of symmetry and beauty, and I can well believe this, from what I have seen of them. In this city, musicians, poets, artists, and idealists are transcendentalists, if you will, love to congregate in their respective temples, which are ever open to all who wish to enter, and by contact with each other's minds throw off new strains of harmony in verse, outline some new work of beauty, develop some beautiful idea, or evoke a new melody of the spheres. And from these master souls beautiful ideas, melodies, and ideals come floating down to earth.